Hello, everyone. I'm Corey.
I'm Eric.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Alec.
And this is the Utini Avatar Show, proud partner of the Utini Network. We are discussing Avatar, The Last Airbender, the new live-action show on Netflix. This week, we are talking all about episode 3 of the show, our favorite moments, how it differs from the animated show, and where we envision us going next. Thanks for hanging out. Be sure to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast if you like what you hear. Before we get into this week's conversations, we have to thank our sponsor, the United Patreon Community. Head over to patreon.com/utini to hear everything that our community has to offer. Stay tuned for more details about that later on in the show. All right, guys, let's dive in. I want to talk about episode 3 because I want to say this episode was kind of weird, honestly. Very different than I expected.
If by weird, you mean good. We're on the same page.
Absolutely,
that's
baby.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I would say it's good, although I think you and I feel a little opposite about this episode, Alec. But we're gonna dive into that. The most noticeable thing about this episode, as we get into our initial gut reactions, just how we reacted to watching it for the first time, I will just kick us off with it was different, very different. We squeezed multiple plot points from multiple episodes into one episode in a very creatively interesting way. I think some of it worked. I think some of it didn't work. Interesting choices. What did you guys think, Alec?
I really liked it, man. If you're talking about, hey, we're gonna shorten the first season of Avatar and make it live action, but we still want to include all of these, you know, plot points that help develop characters, and this is the way to do it, man. 100%. I love this.
Fair enough. Kate, what about you?
I was very confused. This whole episode, I was like, is this Jet? And then until Jet actually came up, I was like, oh, that's Jet.
Yeah.
I was just confused the whole time. There were so many plot points.
That's fair. Eric, what about you?
Easily my favorite episode so far. I think it's because of the introduction of a lot of characters that were interesting, namely Jet and Azula. I thought they were both wonderfully acted and very fascinating to watch. It was just cool stuff. I had a lot of moments of me turning off my brain and being like, this is cool.
Wow. Interesting.
So, and I think
probably the first episode this has happened for you for, I would say.
Yes. And I think it's because this is the first episode directed by someone different. I don't remember their names, but the first
Michael
episodes were directed
Gio?
By. Yeah, were directed by him. And his third episode was directed by somebody different. So I think there was just a different pace. Also, the fact that the story just necessitated these new, especially Fire Nation kind of people, might have just made it better for me. So, my favorite one so far.
That's fair. Also, I just realized that Alec is wearing a My Cabbages shirt. Right?
Oh!
I just want to appreciate that for a moment. That's fantastic.
That was the best part of this entire episode.
Dude, My Cabbages subplot was phenomenal.
I loved it.
Every single time. We thought he was going to say it. Every single time.
Me and Corey kept getting disappointed. We were like, he didn't say it.
Yeah, you're getting Cabbages blue balls, basically.
I know, seriously. Purple cabbages. See, at the very beginning of the episode where they were trying to get into Amashu and they launched that guy's cart off, we're like, that should have been the cabbage guy. Like, why didn't you do like this the whole thing? Like,
you get your payoff. You get your payoff.
Yeah. I'm glad we started with the cabbage guy. Like, such an iconic character that we all wanted to see, and they did it right. Like, there was a lot of build up for the joke. And when they finally showed him, he was exceptionally angry. I love
because that's
cabbage
the guy, right? Like, that's the voice actor, is it not? I feel like I remember hearing that in the casting that is the guy. I might be wrong on
I have no idea.
But I feel like I remember that.
You should look that up. That sounds like an Alecism.
No,
you should
look that up. I probably should know that. Yeah. But to be honest with you, I have no idea.
I feel like
that's fair.
This is also because I'm a little chronically online, and because again, this is the only downside of us doing this week to week. Which, as we said in our episode 1, I think. This is the right way to do this show. Episode at a time.
Yep.
I had seen the meme, the video of the cabbage guy. I saw the meme. I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly what the camera looked like. So I didn't get necessarily the full immersion of the fake out. So that's more on me for being a little too chronically online. Guys, don't go on Twitter X. Don't go on Instagram.
I know.
Go outside.
It sucks.
You know.
On subreddit, like we talked about it last episode.
I will say if you're ever doing a podcast out there, guys, and you need to look something up, maybe don't buy a mechanical keyboard. It is. I am over here just like slowly trying to hit the button.
Listen, it's for the immersion. Yeah. It's for the immersion.
But Alex, you are 100% correct. His name, and I don't want to butcher this, James Say, S-I-E. He does reprise the role within the Netflix show. So great,
yeah.
Great call there, Eric. Great call.
That's cool. That's one of the nice things. Like, obviously, all of Hollywood is very like cold and calculating and profit based. That's fine. That is a very nice thing. I think that they did bring it back.
Putting voice actors in live action shows is one of these small cameos I'm a huge fan of,
yes,
frankly. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Ashley Eckstein never played a single role in the Ahsoka TV show still bothers me to this day. I wish they would give her some kind of cameo, please.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I really do. I really wish they would. It's cool. It's special.
Yeah,
and
it's a cool little thing.
It's a nice little nod to the old days,
yeah,
if you will.
Exactly.
Right?
He has two lines or so. That's all he needs, and it doesn't get in the way of the plot. But that's a good... It's funny. If you guys listened to our last episode, we're getting right into some good things, which are fun. I think it shows the excitement about this episode.
It's a very positive outlook that I took from watching this episode.
Yeah.
So,
agreed.
Let's talk about our
flying cows.
What we call them flying cows. That's what we established last episode. We only recorded it like an hour ago.
Yeah,
I've already forgotten.
So,
pretending like it was last
our
week.
Elephants in the room. Yes, they don't remember.
Elephants in the room, flying cows, things that maybe didn't quite land with us, but may not be a problem for anybody else. Flying cows.
Yeah.
Eric, you got one?
I got an easy one. It's less than my last episode two. I had quite a few. This one really was CGI. Was kind of rough in this episode.
A specific moment you remember?
It was kind of throughout the valley. Like Omashu as a whole, like obviously on a TV budget, they didn't recreate it. The whole city's kind of CGI and volumey. But for most part, I saw a lot of. This is going to be very unspecific, and I apologize to all listeners, but you might know what I mean. This one looked the most like a Netflix show. Like all Netflix shows kind of have the same. It's almost too clean.
That's a brutal realization, actually.
Yeah,
I just have
like it's the lighting is really clean and the sets look very per because it's all computer animated. It's all like there's nothing that's really kind of authentic and gritty about it. And then it all looked like they were just in the Matrix the whole time.
That's the volume. I actually think the wide angle views of the city look great. Well, when we were still
my God,
the little
beautiful
carts and stuff.
The carts were rough. Walk like when they were doing the actual chases through the streets, it was kind of rough. Like the first episode prologue did that well because it was dark and they could really hide a lot of it. I like this was in the daytime, but
you mean when the Aang and Zuko fight starts and all of a sudden nobody's in the street that doesn't seem
not the best, my flying cow is just this is the one where I really felt like oh this is a Netflix budget show. It felt kind of CW at times in the way it looked, but luckily there were enough good things about the cast that let me still.
Did you bring up CW because Kevin Tran from Supernatural plays a part?
I have never seen Supernatural, which is frankly a weird thing about
Alec.
Me.
If there are any,
that does surprise
if there
me.
Are any
your background, Eric, that shocks me.
Yeah, I know.
That shocks
Were you
me,
a Super Hulock guy, Alec?
A Super Who? A what?
Supernatural, Doctor Who, and Sherlock. That was was the fan.
I never got into Doctor Who.
I was friends with those people.
I never got into Doctor Who. I think it's the only time I ever thought about Doctor Who was in college, and Corey and I went to college together, and so did Kate. And when we were there, there was a guy who broke the internet for multiple days for illegally downloading Doctor Who. We couldn't take tests. We couldn't do anything. Like the entire bandwith.
Sounds like a hero.
I'm not sure how I made that happen, actually.
Listen, I may or may not have watched Doctor Who .S05.E04.MKV in my time. Like, who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So all that to say. No, I never got a Doctor Who, but Supernatural, I watched every single bit. I loved how
so who did this character play?
So
who
this
the show,
Kevin Tran is the name of the character in Supernatural. I don't know what his name is in this one, but when this episode starts, he is the leader of the Rebels group. He's the one that gets that actually has the conversation with Ozai and gets caught on fire.
That talks to spoiler Azula.
That's Kevin Tran, and I will only call him Kevin Tran and nothing else.
This guy who was fair enough. I don't know, she's wearing a hat. Couldn't be Azula. I don't think so.
I'm sorry, but that was my flying cow, was that whole scene. I didn't like that. It could have been cut.
Fair,
I would have been super happy. That was a weird.
I've never seen a little girl so happy to watch people burn alive.
I mean, it made sense to me. Like,
no, yeah, oh, for that. Sure, for
yeah.
sure.
Well, I think I'm going to back you up, Caitlin. Actually, on that one, I think I will say that is also my flying cow is the very.
I thought it was Jet at first. I was like, "How did he get in the Fire Nation?" Yeah, then I was like, "Are we in the Earth Nation?" I was so confused.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that. It did not seem like the Fire Nation at all. The little opening sequence of their being like we got to stand up. It felt very Earth Kingdom vibes.
It did.
And the very obvious, clear plot point for that was to establish that Azula in this animated show mm-hmm. is unhinged, right? And we've said this
she's
before.
Sadistic.
We've said this before. Exposition in live action is when you have to explain to the audience that has not seen the animated show who this character is. And I get that.
Yeah.
From a writing perspective. I get why you need to. Well, you feel the need to do that. But other live action shows do not feel the need to do that necessarily.
Listen, Corey, you ate your words, man, because they showed you.
No, yeah,
they didn't eat
the first scene because you know how we knew. You know how we know Azula gets unhinged in the animated show? She gets bangs. That's how we know.
Listen, I love bangs. There's nothing wrong with bangs.
I will say this: I think it gives an opportunity for Ozai to give his reasoning. Now he didn't start the war, but it gives his reasoning as to why they're in the war. Right. And he's like, and this idea of to make peace, we have to control the world.
Yeah.
So,
I liked that.
I
they were done with it. But yeah, I agree with you guys. It was a little like, okay, listen, it's the damn shooting. We got to put a scene together to get to Ozai.
Sucks. I didn't like
Look,
it.
Look,
they would never get in there.
Kevin Tran in Supernatural is a prophet of God. Okay. That is not a joke. His character is literally a prophet of God.
Anything about Supernatural, I will not. It's kind of like Riverdale. Whatever you say happens in that show, I'll believe it.
Shut up.
Yeah,
I'll believe it. I love Riverdale. Sure, there's nothing wrong with Riverdale.
I love Riverdale.
Been World Star in Riverdale, though.
It's ridiculous.
There's a lot.
I love that about Riverdale.
They were never in the comics.
One episode,
any of this
one episode,
the
they're quarterback of the football team. The next episode, they're head of the CIA. That's how it works in Riverdale. That's ridiculous.
Corey, he's both.
He's both at the same time. Also, he leads a biker gang. Also, he's 15. Also, he has a test tomorrow. Also, he's had
a writing genius.
So, yeah. Azula, though.
Yes.
Azula.
Yeah.
Azula, yeah. though. This opening
character intro for her. I think she gets
fine.
This down.
But listen, they could have, all right, so you got the video in the timeline. All right, you have to choose what to cut to achieve the final result. Azula is psycho, right?
Yes.
You could have cut literally everything before she writes the letter to Zhao about. That could be cut. That could be cut.
I think, honestly.
I'm jealous of Zuko. He's my brother. I have to do better than
she's
him.
She's not jealous of him yet. She is, but we don't learn that till much later.
Yeah, and the scene ends with the Fire Lord saying, "Your brother has done the impossible, just as I asked." Which kind of
was a good line.
It was a good line.
I'm like conflicted because I keep having this idea of like he gave Zuko an impossible task, and I would think that he would be more upset that Zuko has succeeded in finding the Avatar. But I guess really in this scene, he's just using it to motivate Azula.
Impossible.
I think he's pleasantly amused.
Yeah. And also it helps him. Like, it's impossible that, oh, cool, I've got the Avatar. That's good for me, though. Like,
he's like, would you look at that? Zuko has actually done what I asked him to. If only all my children were as successful. Like, he uses it to manipulate them. You know what I mean? Because he's a power hungry
father of the year,
right?
Bro.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, let's just say, going right out of the flying cow to an awesome episode. Like, this Ozai casting could not be more different.
Yeah,
than 10 out of 10.
Because Mark Hamill's Ozai is incredible, completely different from this Ozai, and they work. Which I think this is our issue with Iroh, guys, is that we're seeing someone trying to imitate an idea of Iroh from a show, whereas this Ozai saw the character on the page, and he just plays him. He plays the character.
To be fair, I think this is Iroh's best episode so far.
I agree.
Yeah.
I said last episode that
I don't know how we...
yeah.
It's on the floor.
Can I be a permanent flying cow until he's really good?
I know. This episode, we get to see a lot of political and cunning Ivro.
Yes. Yeah,
I will say. And we got to see a glimpse of the Dragon of the West, if you will, in this episode, I feel like. Because,
especially
because
at the end.
He's conniving. Like Ivro has a cunning. You saw the general Ivro in this episode.
The writing, the writing for him was way better. The execution was still rough. I guess that's where I am. Like this was more. They created a better character on the page. Therefore, I think he elevated a bit.
I think so too. I like every single moment. I said this last time. Every single moment he steps in to speak politically for Zuko, phenomenal. It feels like real Iroh in that moment.
Agreed.
When he told Zuko to escape, that you know, you got to get out of here. That felt like real Iroh to me. I wasn't bothered by the fire thing. I thought it was really cool. When they zoomed out and they started sitting, it was like,
I like the idea of it.
Like, ooh, this is pretty cool.
It was just that was just one of my Netflix moments of like, I think I get what they were going for. On HBO, I think I would have crapped myself. You know what I mean?
Yes. All right. So we have spent a lot of time kind of harping on this. I want to talk about the meat of this episode, which is the fact that we shoved in the jet plot, the engineer plot, and the Omashu plot, probably the three strongest plots of the entire first season of the Avatar series into one episode. Wild choice, I have to say. Fairly well executed.
I don't know where was the secret tunnel. I'm mad.
Was that
secret tunnel?
Where's secret tunnel?
Is that this one?
Yeah, that's
secret
the way to
tunnel
Omashu.
Is to Omashu.
Yeah, I remember it was two villages, one's in Omashu,
two lovers?
Here's a hot take. Yeah. Here's a hot take.
Eric, get out. You're not allowed to work for me anymore.
Tunnel. I love Secret Tunnel. Can we agree, first of all, and then I have a follow-up. One, Secret Tunnel at this point is kind of a meme, right?
It is.
It's a meme. I am proud anytime a show adaptation goes against the meme. Because I think like the Cabbage Guy's a meme. They went into it. But the Secret Tunnel, they avoided the meme for sake of the story. Because I think that would have been too.
It's like fan service.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how. Fan service either works or it doesn't work. That's in its own way.
I will totally disagree.
Okay.
Just because I think that's one of my favorite plot points of the entire show. And it's one of the first scenes that we see Aang and Katara start a love interest.
That's true.
Okay?
It is the first love interest Katara episode.
Yeah.
It's a great
Badgers, the original
we learned
Benders.
About the Earth Kingdom lore. That's it.
That's true. But I do agree, I think, with Alec, what you were about to say. Like, I don't see where it goes in this episode. And I think all the cuts they had to make.
This was a lot.
It was a lot. Yeah. Can we acknowledge that? It's a pretty.
Yeah.
Regardless of how it was executed, it was a pretty bizarre choice to squeeze so much into one episode.
I agree.
You guys agree?
Yes. Yeah. And as much crap as I give the writers lately, I think they did.
I don't have a problem with it, I'll be honest with you.
Whoa, I think okay.
Is it exciting?
I think this is a very, very clever way to include some characters that are dearly beloved and also are very well thought out and very interesting. I don't have a problem with this at all, to be honest with you.
Love that.
Let's talk about those characters. I want to talk about Jet. Jet is one of the most divisive characters, I think, in the original animated series. I think the actor was phenomenal. As soon as he showed up on screen, I was like, this is Jet.
Agreed.
This has got to be Jet. I turned to Caitlin and I said, this is Jet.
Gee, that's
I said that to you. I hate to pull us out,
but I have to retrack here just for the people listening. The Cave of Two Lovers is the episode that has Secret Tunnel. That's actually episode 2 of book 2. That's on their way back to Omashu.
That's when they're going back to Omashu.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
I felt like something was off, but I just wanted to... Hey, no. We corrected the ship.
Okay.
We're good.
We'll get back to it.
So there's still room.
There's still room. It could be in the next scene. It could be the next season. That's true. I did think that. I do remember the Cave of Two Lovers being a pretty well executed, well written episode.
It was great.
And a lot of that stuff is much later in the Avatar series. So
great.
That kind of tracks. Anyway, Omashu and Jet and the engineer, whose name I cannot remember.
Danny Pudi plays him. So I don't know the guy's name. Jet, I will say one thing I was very impressed by from a technical level, because I think I've admittedly been very critical of the technical parts of this show. I think I think Jet, though, he was written very well. This could be such a cliche, boring dude, bro. And I thought he was written very intelligently.
He was.
And his swords should not work outside of anime because
they were so good.
Threw the sword and then threw the second sword and it clicked with it and then it made like a kind of a whip type thing.
It worked.
It was really cool.
That's a very good point. We talked about this before. Like the biggest challenge with animation versus live action is that there's no limits to animation.
Yeah, if you can,
right? Animation, you can you can make their face what you want. You can make them fly in crazy ways. You can make
30 feet in the air in every fight in animation.
Everybody jumps 30 feet in the air. Yes, that's exactly it. But like, That's a fantastic point, Eric. The sword somehow worked, and you know what?
I think we better.
Yeah,
maybe better. Yeah. I think we have to thank the editing team for that because they knew the exact way to cut that, where you only see the sword for a split second, and the hook is connected to a hook. Mm-hmm. You only see it for a split second that it worked. Like, it didn't look like this crazy over the top thing.
I was a big fan. I just want to say the tiger swords, hook swords, whatever you want to call them. It's my favorite weapon in the entire series. It's the coolest looking thing.
I think that's a pretty good take, honestly.
It's used historically accurate in the show.
Wait, there's a historical precedent for it?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Most of the weapons you see in the Avatar show, like the fans are like that too.
The most historically accurate part is the scene where he hooks it together, like you were saying, and uses it as like a longer extension of a sword.
It works super well, and I think like they're doing a really cool job with how people fight firebenders. Because like we said in the last episode on Kyoshi, it's very hard to make it realistic. Like they're throwing fire at you, how do you avoid it?
Burn you alive.
So like
I know.
Smacking away with the fans. Now Jet being able to deflect with his web. Like I thought they're doing a nice job of keeping that consistent as well.
I agree. 100%.
I think they said something in the last episode of like, how do you deal with not being able to bend? And it was like, you have to be better than the benders.
Yeah.
And they're proving that over and over again.
So when they...
I liked Jet's moment with Katara too, where he said, I don't know anything about bending.
Okay.
What I do know about is fight.
I wrote that down pretty beautiful work with Katara and Jet. I thought the two of them. Katara had a moment like, I know Sokka got really good when he met Suki's actor and they kind of elevated. Katara did the same thing. When she was in a scene with Jet, who was a very good actor, she rose to his level. And I think the two of them had very, like, when she's like, do you remember, when he said, remember the sunrise? That was kind of a really beautiful scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
So you're saying that Aang is the problem?
Yeah! Yes, Alec!
Listen, I don't know anything about directing. I don't know anything about casting. I can't imagine the pressure and the challenge of casting child actors.
Oh, it's impossible.
It's got to be.
That's
horrible.
Why most of them have horrific adult lives. Like
I know that's true.
Yeah,
for it to pay off.
Can we say though that so far my two favorite castings have been Suki and now Jet. I think that they're absolutely perfect for those roles. I would also say that they did an incredible job, an absolutely incredible job in casting Pipsqueak. Smellerbee,
yes.
Duke, Longshot.
Longshot.
Yep.
They seemed like real kids, but still had, there's that balance. They had power, but they were definitely still juvenile children.
I was trying to figure out, like, I don't think Pipsqueak is that big of a kid, but I'm sure he's big.
I'm like,
is this just like forced perspective? Like, are we just using old school tricks?
It was kind of weird.
CGI. I did love Pipsqueak and what's the name? The Biff? What's his name?
Who? What?
Small one?
The big guy. Here's the big guy.
Pipsqueak.
That's it. Damn it. I did what they did in the episode. For God's sake. Pipsqueak. Yes. What's the little
the
guy?
The Duke.
Yeah.
Yes. Pipsqueak and the Duke. Pipsqueak, weird choice. We barely saw him on screen. Like, and it's because the actor is not actually a big guy. That's why.
It's a CGI effect.
It's a forced perspective thing like Gandalf and Frodo. That's what it is.
I have to ask, so this is obviously a lot darker than the animated series. When they say he's taking out the trash, are we intended to think that he's just killing people?
Yes.
Yeah, dude. Yes. He's killing them, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's just killing them.
I think so.
I actually appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that they kept to the
I think it is true to the original.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like the original is fairly innocent. It's a kids' TV show, after all. You can't say, oh, yeah, we're going to go murder this guy.
You mention it. You imply it.
Yeah, but you don't show it.
I guess you're right, because they intended to basically drown the entire village.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. Jet is dark.
He's a terrorist.
Dark guy, dude. He's a terrorist,
He's the most honest character. Like, he's been radicalized by what the Fire Nation did to his own home, and now he will respond in kind. Like, he is the biggest warning towards murder.
I know.
In the animated show, I hated Jet. He was, like, my least favorite character just because of, like,
his
morality.
Jet. I remember you talking about Jet.
Yeah, I had a really, really strong reaction to Jet. And in this show, I guess it was the actor, but I found myself understanding Katara because I was like, wow, he's hot. And then I was like, wow, he's like, he's saying some like smooth things. Like I'm following along. I'm getting sucked into the story. He did such a good job that I understand Jet in a new light now.
That's the point. Was it when he put the weed stem in his mouth and turned around?
Can we talk about that?
I was still mad. I was like, that's stupid.
Like, what the hell did he put in his mouth?
I think it's a dart.
I'm pretty sure it's just milkweed, isn't it?
In the animated show, it was just a milkweed, right? Yeah. So it's a piece of wheat, right? But in a live action show, it was something else. It looked like metal. It looked weird as shit.
It looked like a poison dart.
It looked like a poison dart to me too.
I thought it was the literal stem that he plucked.
It was huge. It was too big.
Stems and the
stems are pretty.
Did you play outside?
I don't live in a mosh.
Have you seen grass?
No, I'm a terrorist. Touch grass.
Yeah, seriously.
I did have one moment where I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm like, it was sitting so still in his mouth. I'm like, did they CGI in?
It looked weird.
It's very possible. That's the wheat.
That's all I'm saying.
It was
weird with the wheat.
Overall, though, his scene
it might be hard to say your lines, you know.
Yeah.
In a way that actually comes across good for audio.
They should have just given him a toothpick.
That's what I was going to say. They should have given him a toothpick. It would have been just.
It would have been the biggest toothpick.
It would have been.
It would have.
But yeah, my
a cigar. You should have smoked a cigar. Yeah. Actually.
Well, speaking of really cool new characters, I realized because I'm looking at my notes, I put Jet. Hell yeah, was literally my note. And then right before that, though, there was another new character that I meant to mention earlier. Azula, we love, but the gang, Azula's posse.
Let's talk about Azula and the posse.
This felt very
Iroh again, where they're like casting people who feel like they have to play the same character as the show.
I like them.
Look, I don't hate the characters, and we only got to see them for about 0.05 seconds. So I don't want to take. I don't want to have too big of an opinion on it yet, because we literally have only seen them for like 5 seconds. But I will say it is obvious. At this point,
they're too important
that they are trying to imitate what was in the animated show.
Huh. Worked for me. Maybe it's because of the imitation. Maybe it's because it was so short and the imitation was like just for the couple lines that it worked. So maybe it's maybe I don't know. I'll keep an eye on it. But for me, it worked. But because it was imitation.
I think I'm just mad that they're here so early.
I don't.
Interesting.
I think I'm mad about that.
I think I'm more upset about them throwing in the cliche shot of the splitting the arrow than I am about the two friends being there.
That's fair.
I think
that whole sequence was kind of weird, dude. I'm not gonna lie.
I think Azula, that
sequence was weird.
I would have preferred to see her like miss the second shot and then freak out and throw fireballs at the target or something.
Ooh, yeah.
Interesting.
Her like hitting the second shot perfectly while like delivering lines to her friends. It didn't really do anything for me, to be honest.
Set up though that she is the better sibling. Like she is the more powerful. She can't show weakness. Like we bought Azula, as it were.
She is perfection.
I guess she does start out that way in the show, and then over time you see this unraveling of the thread.
Yeah, she is the perfect. Mm-hmm. Like I remember. Again, my small memories of watching the show of like Azula comes in and it is like, why isn't she Fire Lord? Like, she's like, I should be Fire Lord. And you're like, yeah, no, you should be. There's no reason why. Yeah. And then she slowly begins to unravel when she starts getting insert spoiler here of when she starts to expand her powers a little bit.
Well, and the spoiler
of having a reaction
of Mei and Zuko having like, you know, a friendship. And so you see Mei kind of like defend him in a way.
Yeah, I hope they expand them. I thought it was a nice intro, but I can see how it was a little more of an imitation than it was an actual character choice.
Caitlin, what do you think about
so
Mei and was it Ty Lee?
I'm very passionate about these girls. because they tell a women's story in a very different way, and they tell different women's stories in different ways. I'm just now realizing why I think I'm hating Azula right now. I think she's playing too much on the trope of daddy's perfect little girl. And that's really grossing
and
me out.
And less of powerful, independent, scary.
Yeah, unhinged, independent psychopath. She's like wanting to please Ozai a little bit too much, I think, for me right
that's
now.
That's true. And because in the animated show, because Ozai hadn't been introduced yet.
Right.
Ozai was not introduced yet, so we don't ever get that perspective until much later.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. I think Azula's playing. It's so interesting because some characters, I'm really like, we do take more of the animated show. Some characters, we leave it alone. And there's no rhyme or reason because even on this podcast, we've discussed multiple characters and the same rules don't apply for all of them. And that's so personal.
Now, Ty Lee, I think she got even the movements correct.
Yeah.
I don't think she really even had more than like one line.
No.
So it I have no opinion again. On that. Her facial expressions and movements were pretty spot on. May irritated me a little bit because she's supposed to be like emo girl, but this was a little bit cringe emo girl for me.
She was trying hard. It seemed like they were trying. I don't know who. What one of you said that earlier? Like, it felt like they were trying.
I mean,
very
I love
it. Try
hard,
emo
girl. That's the thing. Like, I have
she
a very
didn't have the darkness though. So there's supposed to be like a really, really big darkness to me.
Look,
I
went straight from this as a kid to like growing into emo and listening to Avril Lavigne and like.
Yes,
May,
Alec, preach the
May,
word.
May was definitely the one that I was focused on.
Correct.
And I don't hate this. I don't hate the performance. I don't hate the writing of it. I'm just kind of weary about where this is going to go and what it's going to look like because we get the split second. But if it turns into another Iroh thing, I'm going to be disappointed.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say is I feel about the trio the way I feel about Iroh is I'm like willing to give them a pretty big margin to to figure this out because I love the characters so much that like Iroh, I really want to work. So I'm like buying in. I'm not just going to be angry that Iroh is not the character I want him to be because I believe he maybe has the potential to be that character.
Yeah.
So I feel that way about the trio a little bit too because Azula is, I mean, good Lord. I mean, phenomenal character, one of the most pivotal characters in the show.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It shapes Zuko's entire arc. It shapes like Fire Lord's arc. Mm-hmm. Like it shapes Avatar's arc. It shapes Katara too.
Yep.
Like she's such a pivotal character that like they have to get it right. So I'm willing to give the writers a little bit more leeway. I think.
Yeah. And do you think they are purposely not showing her bending at all in these scenes?
Yes. It's gonna be lightning, so we're gonna see it.
I think so. Yeah. I also,
when she finally bends, it's gonna be like
she doesn't have a reason to. Yet, I don't think
that's.
I think the first time she does it, I hope is in a scene where she's where she is like face to face with Zuko or something.
That'd be good. And she's like obviously we've seen Zuko this whole time, and she's like obviously way better. Than
I want
Zuko, right. Like
it's been a long time since they've seen each other. So look, I'm kind of projecting here,
it's
but
been 3 years.
But if I could have it my way. Which, you know, this isn't Burger King, so. But
wow.
if I could have it my way, what I would do is I would find a way to put them in a scene together, and then have Zuko kind of lose to the lightning, and then it gives an opportunity for Iroh to do his scene from the animated show, where he does like the for audio listeners, he puts his hand out with two fingers extended and
bending.
Like shows the energy bending kind of thing coming through his arm, which is so freaking cool.
Pivotal. It's pivotal. With Zuko on the mountain with the lightning is pivotal moment in the show. Like truly.
Yes.
Like I hope they get that right. I think Azula is definitely the story device by which you do that 100%.
Well she's gonna push Zuko the most.
Yeah.
So,
and I will
holding out for Azula.
Yes.
The actress for Azula, even though she is young, She does, I think, present in this episode, her introductory episode, she has power and presence in scenes, I think, just as an actress. I think she actually commands the camera. I think she speaks with gravitas, and I think she has some strength inherent within her that allow me to trust that she'll be able to carry that. Now, whether they handle it right, I think, as you all are saying, we'll see. But I think that I, if nothing else, saw that the actress, I'm like, oh, you have the capability to do that if they can write it well enough.
100%.
That is 100%. Refreshing.
Speaking of characters, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the last big characters that we have not discussed so far, and that is the engineer, right?
Yes!
And his son.
The mechanist, as they refer to him.
The mechanist. Yes, the mechanist.
Does the boy have a name?
Yes.
I'm sure he does.
Teo. It's Teo.
Teo.
Okay.
That's it. Teo. I will say, as much as I love the mechanist in the animated show, that entire plot is phenomenal. It's the Air Temple.
Yep.
The Southern Air Temple?
It's the Northern Air Temple.
Western?
Northern.
It's the Northern.
Northern Air Temple.
Okay.
100%, trust me.
Major
Northern
plot
Air
point
Temple.
In the show. The major reveal that obviously the mechanist is working for the Fire Nation in the animated show is a little bit stronger, I think, than we saw in this episode so far. But we don't know where it's going. We're not really done with this plot point yet.
Yep.
The whole blasting jelly thing in the cave was quite convoluted.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Why did they have to go up there exactly?
Obviously, they are trying to stick
to the cave exactly.
They are trying to stick to the same storyline that was in the show.
Yeah.
Which in the
secretly working for the Fire Nation.
Well,
right.
Well, no. So the blasting jelly is Jet's thing. So like in Jet's storyline, the blasting jelly was used. They stole it from the Fire Nation camp. They had barrels there. That's when they get introduced to Aang and Katara. They fight it out with the Fire Nation patrol, basically. And Jet and them save them, and then they move on. But the point is, they get the blasting jelly from there. That's what he's going to use to blow up the dam and flood the town. That's that storyline. Yeah. And this show, obviously, is very different. And they tie in Jet's storyline with Teo and Sai. So... You know, it's definitely different. I don't hate it at all, to be honest. I think it works pretty well. I think the would you call the I guess it would be a MacGuffin is the clothing that they wear and the thing. This is just meant to get the plot point.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm like it was very convoluted. Why did they have to go to the cave at the top of the mountain in the first place?
Well, because you wouldn't be making
investigate.
Yeah, you wouldn't be making blasting jelly in the city.
Yeah, but investigating what? Why'd they go up there?
He was flying around and he spotted the cave, but he somehow wasn't able to get out there. But no one helped him up there.
I guess for me, why this worked, and this is a total cop out answer, and it's very weird. I think it was so cliche and obvious that Jet was bad. That I didn't need to know the reasoning of how it was his fault because it was so clear that they were making it his fault that I think it was lazy writing. Like, as I'm thinking about it, I truly cannot explain what it was about, which is odd in retrospect.
Yeah, me either.
But in the moment, I'm like, well, I know it's Jet and I know the guy is
right. Fighting. I mean, I get it. But you're right.
That is lazy writing.
It's a moment of empowerment for I think both Sokka and Katara in the original show, though. Of like they figure out that Jet's maybe not the right guy.
It pits them against each other.
Right. Yeah. Katara has that moment where I'm choosing right versus wrong, and she attacks Jet and freezes him to the tree. Remember?
They do have that sibling battle.
Yeah.
Sokka's like, I hate Jet, and Katara's like, you're wrong. You don't know him.
Exactly. And they kind of figured that out, and they got there quickly. But the whole cave sequence was weirdly unnecessary to me.
Yeah.
Like the plot and
way to fly up there.
It was expensive. They had to waste CGI budget.
I
don't feel like any of the dialogue written in that scene or any of the exposition for the characters was worthy of giving it screen time.
Me either.
That's fair.
Yeah, I agree. That's the point I'm trying to make. We made the challenging decision, I think, creatively to squeeze a lot of different plot points into one episode, and then we weirdly spun off for like a fairly significant amount of time of going to the cave and finding the clothes. What was the clothes about?
Yeah, I feel like
again, to me, that's just a MacGuffin.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We are just trying to figure out a way to get the plot point to move along.
Yep.
They recognize the fabric. It was weird. Like, it was kind of weird and fine.
Yeah.
And blow her past
nobody
it,
else is allowed to have
somehow
fabric.
Palpatine's alive.
Yeah, nope. No, no.
No, nobody else can have fabric alive, or ropes. It. That's it.
Yeah. I know. It was goofy. No. Yeah. Weird. Kind of weird, but we got to the end. I thought the depiction of the mechanist in Teo, is that his name?
Yep, Teo.
Teo were good.
Yeah.
It was spot on.
Yeah, completely
Teo,
fine.
I liked them.
There were no rotten eggs.
No.
There
were no rotten eggs.
For those who are fans of the original, no rotten eggs, no gas leak.
Yeah.
No
they,
air
they
temple.
Cut so many little things.
No tanks. There was no Fire Nation tanks. Obviously, why would they be there? But I do love that just randomly you're watching the show and you're like, oh, the Fire Nation has tanks. And if they get blown back, the middle part just rotates. And
yeah.
And they have like Dave anchors Filoni. That they shoot up to get
it's
up.
Peak Dave Filoni, my guy.
Yeah. Oh, I think what I realized is that in retrospect, I didn't connect to as many of the inaccuracies in this episode because they combined so many things that I couldn't even retroactively connect to a specific point in an episode
that I was
just watching the show, which maybe is the point of a good adaptation, is when you can
it flows really, really well together.
Yeah, but it's a bold choice. But it's a bold choice of them.
And it's a little confusing. Caitlin, you mentioned at the very beginning of the episode that you felt like this episode was confusing because there was a lot of trying to recognize, because what we're doing unconsciously, whether we realize it or not, we're trying to recognize the animated show in live action.
Yes, right? 100%.
It's very hard. It was confusing to figure out, like, where are we in the timeline, in the characters?
I will say there were two very beautiful moments for me in both storylines. One was when the mechanist Sai was talking to Sokka, and he was like, buddy, you're an engineer.
You're brilliant.
It was like almost a fatherly moment. You have a really special gift.
They talked about Sokka's father.
Yeah, they did. And Sokka kind of sold his father short of like, we know Sokka's father like went off to war and so he's not been around. But like nobody's told Sokka, you did a good job, bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Just so you guys know, Jet's storyline is episode 10 and the Northern Air Temple with Teo and Sai is episode 17. And episode 5 is the King of Omashu, when they actually go to Omashu.
So
we get a combination of episode 5, which we really didn't even get to, episode 10, and episode 17.
Yeah, and obviously we're sticking around. I mean, I'm sure we'll briefly touch on this here in a couple minutes as we wrap up, but like we saw Bumi for a second.
We did.
But we're clearly going to get him in his main episode, next episode. Obviously.
Which begs the question, maybe, why did we have to get to Omashu to immediately have everybody leave Omashu to go outside into the woods and then also leave Omashu to go inside of a cave and then to come back to Omashu in the very end? Weird choice now that I'm thinking
about. Why is everyone trying to go back to Omashu?
I think it was just establishing the Earth Kingdom, maybe.
Maybe so.
If it's so hard to get in and out, why do they keep going in and out all the time?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you just kind of write off and you don't really think about it. It's not something that's going to stop me from, like, you know, loving the episode as much as I do of the three that we've gotten to see so far.
Yeah. It's kind of nice to think about these as being like, oh, these are nitpicks, but it's cool. That's fine. To get to that point as opposed to all the flying cows.
Yes, my other beautiful moment in this show was out in the woods with Jet and all the kids. It felt like the Lost Boys. It felt like Peter Pan, and it felt like Indoor. It was a very beautiful community that they made.
I like their hideout a lot more, maybe because it's just believable. Yeah. The one in the animated show is so it's so Star Wars.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. No, Kate, I literally thought of Hook, the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Like that, it wasn't even the anime.
It was entirely like that.
Movie. I was like, oh my gosh, like Rufio's around here. Who hilarious is Dante Bosco, who voiced Zuko.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
That is true.
All right, friends, we're taking a short break from our journey through the Avatar The Last Airbender to share something truly special, and I'm talking about The United, our vibrant Patreon community. This week's episode is brought to you by The United, which is the heart of our Uteniverse. That's where fans of Avatar, Star Wars, nerd culture, and even sports unite. It's all about diving deep into the fandoms you love, get behind-the-scenes looks, and get peeks behind what goes into our YouTube channel production, and you also get ad-free versions of all of our shows. Be sure to check out patreon.com/Uteni, where you can become part of The United. Now, let's get back to the world of Avatar and continue our journey through his mysteries and magic. I think the last thing that I want to kind of tie up here and talk about a little bit is, where are we going next? Because this is the first time, I think, in three episodes.
Bumi, baby. Yes.
First time in three episodes where we have deviated.
Yes.
Alec, you pointed out that we have episode 5, 17, and what was the other one?
Like 10?
5, 10, 10, and 17.
That's wild, all right? This is the first time we've extensively deviated from the path a little bit, right? Episode one was pretty spot on. Episode two had a lot of elements that were pretty spot on. But now we are, this is creative vision that we're seeing, right?
Yep.
Where the hell are you going next?
Look, because a lot of the episodes in season one of the animated show are what I like to call the, like, adventure of the week. You know, they're kind of like one-offs, you know, and then when they get to certain cities, you'll have a couple episodes where they're all kind of tied together. But episode 17 is really just kind of like a one-off. It's not really tied into anything until you get into the later seasons. So for them to kind of pull that out and go, it doesn't have to be there. It can be somewhere else. I totally get that. And that's why I think it's a very, very smart decision to do it the way that they did.
Yeah. I think this is where a little bit of the advantage of seeing like the trailers and things around, like, we know that Bumi has the big like earthbending thing with Aang, and we saw Bumi at the end of this episode, so I think realistically there's no way we're not getting the Bumi Aang story next.
You think that's the whole episode is just a super heavy Bumi thing?
I hope it would be my opinion.
Is it going to be a, you think it'll be a, like a little contest? Like Booby made it.
Well, what's
Booby made it do?
I don't want to get this wrong, but I think his creature is called Fluffy, right? Or something?
Flopsy.
I want to see Flopsy.
I think there's going to be less. Booby is so cool because he's so eccentric. I think there's going to be I think it's going to be pretty toned down. My bar a little low.
How are they gonna?
I want to see Aang and
CGI.
I want to see Aang and like the trial of the temples or whatever that Bumi makes him do.
But that's what I'm asking.
Crystal rings on Sokka and Katara, and they become crystals at the end. Yeah. How are they gonna do that?
And then it turns into rock candy. It's like
they turn into rock candy and fall over because they're so heavy.
They can't do that.
Airbender fight, and then anything else is gravy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gonna be sad.
Yeah, but I
hope there's a big reunion though, because Boomy's old enough to remember.
Yeah, they're friends.
That's true.
Friends.
Listen, Kate and I regularly say, "Let us leave." We say that every week. Just about like when it's time to go somewhere, we're like, "All right, we're done eating at a restaurant." We're like, "All right, let us leave." We say that all the freaking time, and it's from the episode
with Boomy,
where remember Aang is like, "Let us leave," and he goes, "Let us leave." And it's really weird. It zooms in on his mouth.
Yeah, Boomy is. I mean, love I think that. he's your favorite character, right? Right, Corey.
I love King Boomy.
Yeah,
I think he's phenomenal. I love the character. So, like, there's a lot of pressure, I think, to get him right. He's the only character.
He's senile.
Think about this.
Yeah,
he's the only character in the entire Avatar show who knew Avatar before the 100 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
The only one.
He's a pretty significant guy.
They were kids.
That's so hard to.
It is.
I mean, Appa knew him. What are we talking about?
Appa lived with him in the iceberg.
That's true. He was in the iceberg.
He's the only character that I know that has lived his entire life with Aang being gone, and now Aang comes back.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, there's a lot of pressure there, and also the live action series could completely ignore that piece of
story. Yeah. I'm going to try to assume that Boomy's going to be back, and it's been very hard, but I'm going to assume as far as specific story beats, let's see what they bring in. But as long as it's an earnest portrayal and they have a relationship of sorts and it's done well,
I hope he's a little crazy. I just want to be a little crazy.
A little crazy.
They've already alluded to it. Jet said he's senile. He said that earlier.
But yeah, I think Boomy's the next thing. And it's going to be great, or it's going to, because you can't half-ass Boomy.
I don't like this answer, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think they're going to blow through the Zoomy. The
Zoomies.
They're going to Zoomy through the Boomy story. They're going to Zoomy through the Boomy. They're going to Zoomy through the Boomy. And then we're going to quickly get to Azula's here.
Look,
I think it's for the next episode.
That sounds right. No.
I'm going to put a spoiler. If you don't want to know like a big secret plot point.
Have you watched the episode?
No. If you don't want to know like a big tie-in thing that happens at the end, then just skip a little bit.
Like the animated show?
Yes.
Because
they are alluding that they're going to bring this in at some point into this show. And that is Boomy's connection with Iroh. And they're secret gang.
Oh, the pie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The pie show. You can talk about that. You can talk about spoilers. It's all right.
This is a really big one, and they're alluding to the pie show. He picked up a White Lotus tile.
Order of the Lotus.
He purchases a White Lotus tile. So
he does.
So I think what's going to happen here, in my opinion, is Boomy is going to transfer Iroh. He's going to put on a show. He's going to transfer Iroh out and have him sent to like Ba Sing Se or something, right? And on that journey to Ba Sing Se, my feeling is that Boomy will do this because he knows that it will be his best chance to escape capture. And this is when we see from the trailers, like Eric was talking about, we know that what's her name with the giant anteater smeller
is going
to show up. I feel terrible. I can't remember the character's name, but yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, this is your awakening right here, Eric.
It sure is.
I'm pretty sure that Boomy will send him away.
Let's just say that.
And then Zuko is going to hire her, and they will track him down on the road as he's being like transferred out.
That's a pretty specific cut.
That is my call.
Hold up. Wait. I thought she came in when Appa leaves. She comes back when Appa leaves?
Zuko and Iroh hire her to find the Avatar. Because they have Katara's necklace. They use the necklace to try to find...
You guys!
Then Zuko uses her to find his uncle, Iroh.
This will be the first time he goes back to the spirit world, though, with the panda spirit.
Maybe.
That is coming.
Blind right now. Like,
everybody's like, what the hell are you guys talking
just
about?
Just cut the last 5 minutes.
All right, I'm an
honor, like having tippy tappies.
All right, let's bring us back.
Maybe.
Yes. Let's bring us back. All right, Sokka Stacks, favorite moments. I'm going to hit first because there's a moment that we have not talked about at all. The Aang versus Zuko fight in the market was phenomenal.
Very solid.
Choreography with the fat dodging it. It was beautiful. No fire bendings allowed. That was beautiful writing, was beautiful choreography. Honestly, my favorite moment in the whole show on this episode.
Very solid.
Favorite moment. Loved it.
Love that.
I'm going to steal that.
Can't steal it. Do something different.
Skip me.
Okay. All right. Alec, you have a Sokka snack?
I will give a small one here. We finally get to know who Mutton Chops is.
Mutton Chops.
What
the hell
does
that mean?
Lieutenant G, who is now going to be the informant. He's going to be the informant for Zhao. But I've just been calling him Mutton Chops.
Okay, yes. That was good. Mine is going to be the quiet intimate scene with Jet and Katara about talking about her mom and unlocking her bending. I thought it was just a really well acted, nice, quiet scene. And in a show where I've been kind of a little more critical of the non action scenes, I want to highlight it.
It's fair.
Okay, Alec, you sparked it for me. one of my, like, the funniest scenes to me was when one of the crew members comes in and he starts talking shit to Iroh.
That's him.
Like,
that's the guy.
Why the fuck are you here?
Yeah, he's the only crew guy that matters. They've like chosen one guy, and it's G.
I know.
And he's in every scene that they need a crew guy to do something.
It was just the abruptness. Corey turned to me and he said, "Why did they have to be so mean to that guy?"
So mean. Zuko was like, "Shut the hell up! Nobody
is." It's highlighting Zuko's character as. He has been betrayed by the Fire Nation, by his father, by the most important person, and yet he is still trying to remain so Fire Nation, and he is still convinced that he is at the right place and that he is going to be able to achieve within the borders and following the rules that are set by his father. And
he doesn't even trust his own crew member, though.
Right.
It's hilarious because he's so mean to this guy over again. That's a good moment.
It's like that scene of from Saving Private Ryan where he's like, gripes go up, not down.
Gripes go up.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, what would you say if you were on this mission? Well, I'd say, this is a great mission, sir. This is the best mission I've ever been on, sir. Like, yeah, it's a great moment. It's a great moment.
I am fully willing
to
risk the lives.
That's the Sokka snack. MVP, who is your MVP for this episode?
Jet, frankly.
Jet,
namely the actor for the portrayal. Again, he did some bad things, but I think he stole the episode for me.
I think I'm actually going to say, shockingly, I'm going to say Aang for this episode.
Eric just fell out of his chair. Hang on, guys.
No, we're almost done.
Just gonna roll with it. I know. I liked Aang in this episode. This is the first episode that we've seen the character have some gumption. He's had some character growth, I think. He's kind of like leaning into what Avatar Kyoshi told him, which was, you know, you have to be the Avatar. You have to accept your responsibility. Like, I thought it was pretty good. His dialogue wasn't that bad. Like, when he said that, no, we have to stay here, we're going to take care of this, I liked it. I thought it was done well. I think that's my MVP for this episode.
Cool.
My
fight was good.
That fight was
Zuko.
Great.
Was liked
great,
it.
Actually,
I will give mine in a two part, and it is my MVP is one long shot for managing to climb a tree and somehow put an arrow on fire, and somehow not get caught by anybody, and also not be seen by anybody, and then Katara for somehow being able to get into the presence of the king of Omashu with nobody questioning it, and waterbending to save everybody's life.
And then also no one questioning that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
no exactly. One cares about her being there. It's pretty great.
They're like, whoa, waterbend. What?
Yeah. No, good for her. That water whip was dope.
Yeah, it was a very strange scene.
The entire arrow was on fire. That's never happened before.
Yeah, and I'm like,
the entire arrow doesn't need to be on fire, only the tip.
It's like when you light a match and you're like, okay, but I just need this to last a little longer.
I know, but the whole match is on fire now. You're like, oh, and then it burns your finger and you're like, shit, and drop it. Yeah,
exactly it.
My okay.
MVP.
This is a cheat answer, but my MVP are inanimate objects, okay?
Okay. What?
One, the silk scarves. Yes.
Silk scarves. Okay.
The silk scarf very was pretty. Just such a good scene where Aang and Zuko is going through it.
Yep.
We already talked about that. Two, something we did not mention. The mail slots.
The mail slots?
Yes.
The mail.
The scene where Katara and Sokka are going up in the mail things.
Oh, yes.
Mail buckets.
The carts. Yes,
dude.
Anyway, when they make that jump, I was like,
that's like
I only held my breath.
That's like an Assassin's Creed leap of faith.
It looks so bad.
It was scary, but yeah,
it looks so bad. The CGI was
atrocious. That's my MVP. That's my answer.
I will say, I think we've all given our MVPs. There's one more thing. As an anime fan, something that I saw, and I don't know if this was actually a throwback or if this was maybe just a happy accident for me, but there is a scene when they're in the mechanist office where they pan. Mm-hmm. It's very quick, and they switch to a Sokka scene, and there is a bottle on the table that has the alchemist symbol that is used in Full Metal Alchemist.
Wow.
And I don't know truthfully what I think probably happened. I think there was a set producer who was like, we need to put something here. He's into engineering, maybe he's into alchemy, and they just searched symbol and it just happened to be that
Flamel's
cross. That's the more likely scenario, or maybe somebody did have a tie to Fullmetal Alchemist, but I was going through the Reddit pages like Corey likes to do. Mm-hmm. When as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I've got to search this up. Like, is this actually a callback? Is this like,
wow,
whatever? And somebody was like, imagine Captain Roy Mustang is his new fire instructor, which for anybody who's seen Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, that will be a great image. So anyway,
that's a deep cut.
That's my side note for this episode.
I like it. Well, this was another fun episode of this show. I'm excited to see where it goes next. I think for the first time, I feel like I don't really know where the show is going to go next. Nope. And I kind of like that. That makes it exciting. I'm excited to talk about this with you guys next week. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Utini Avatar Show. If you are looking for other fun shows, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup in the Utini Network. If you are already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you very, very much. A special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, and Michael Fry, and Raymond Bozinski on our Jedi High Council, and James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo on our Alliance High Command for your amazing support. We appreciate you guys very, very much. Let's keep the party going. Hop over in Discord, and you will find our channel, the Avatar Netflix channel, as we're talking about what's going on in the show. Huge shout-out to our behind-the-scenes stars, Kyle, for making the sound good. my fellow hosts for juggling all the things, and Wes for the Utini Network support. To our fantastic listeners, you are absolutely the heart of what we do here. Your stories and your voices and your passions, that is what makes this thing special that we do together. That's going to do it for us, guys. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and let's keep having a great time together. We'll catch you next week. Support for this show and all Utini Network podcasts comes from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Utiniverse, United is where our most passionate fans gather to deepen their journey through the worlds of Avatar, Star Wars, nerd culture, and even sports. By joining United on Patreon, you gain access to an exclusive realm filled with all kinds of content, behind the scenes, do a look at our YouTube channel, ad-free listening of all of our podcasts, and regular insider updates. To join and start your journey with United, visit patreon.com/utini, and together we can build a stronger community. Thank you for your support, and remember, the adventure continues in every episode of The Avatar Show and across all Utini Network podcasts.